The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Yes, the woman in your life is you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, and my technical engineer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Boy, what a beautiful morning. Little raindrops coming in. It's really, really good to be alive. I have two special guests with me today. Joining me in the studio is Vesta Copestakes, the publisher of the Sonoma County Gazette, which I'm so excited to be writing about. I write the Santa Rosa Snippets column. And also, I want you to know that when I do the second interview with Zoe Nicholson, who is a equality activist for the past 50 years, she does speaking, writing, and organizing. And because it's National Women's History Month, we're going to be talking about the film that she produced, Alice Paul, The Heart of an Activist. And we'll be talking in depth about Alice Paul. Just in case my listeners are curious, who was Alice Paul? You know, I don't know if you've seen Iron-Jawed Angels, but she's pretty much the lead in there. It was a great, great movie. Alice Paul was the architect of some of the most outstanding political achievements on behalf of women in the 20th century. She was born on January 11th, 1885. To Quaker parents in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, and Alice Paul dedicated her life to the single cause of securing all rights for all women. Few individuals has had as much impact on American history as Alice Paul. Her life symbolizes the long struggle for justice in the United States and around the world. Her vision was the ordinary notion that women and men should be equal partners in society. Women and men should be equal partners in society.
Isn't that like you
and him? I'm looking forward to talking with Zoe Nicholson about Alice Paul. And, you know, like I said, this is National Women's History Month, founded here in Sonoma County, California. And remember, our history is our strength. And I have to admit, doing research on Alice Paul has made me a lot stronger. Really. Well, what a week I had, you know, after I left, after I'll tell you what happened, what I did the night of Monday. I went to a seminar or a speak by Gloria Steinem, but I'll get into that a little bit further on in the show. Well, it was my birthday on Saturday, and when I left the studio on Monday, I was 76, and this morning I'm 77. It's hard to believe. I had a great day with Ken, and a special shout out to all of those who sent me those wonderful birthday wishes. I mean, you know, that's the fun of Facebook. You know, at least you can feel, you know, you can feel like people do really care about you. And a special shout out to my dear, dear friend, Evelina Molina, who made a great, great video on Facebook to talk about what was happening at one of our birthday parties. I have three friends. One of them is Evelina Molina and also my friend Mary Norman, and we call ourselves Sister Fish. So happy birthday to all of us. I mean, Pisces, here we are. We're coming out of Pisces. This is March 20th. This is, I believe, the last day of Pisces as we move into Aries. So life is pretty good. Well, it's happening this Wednesday. And I am so excited. I'm not only excited, but I'm a nervous wreck, but that's okay. On March 22nd, the National Organization for Women, the Sonoma County Chapter, in collaboration with KBBF 89.1 FM and yours truly, Women's Spaces, will be hosting a panel with the three women board of supervisors, so Susan Gorin, Linda Hopkins, and Shirley Zane, who made history for the first time in Sonoma County's 166-year history. We have, out of the five supervisors, we have three women, which makes it a majority of women, and also the second city in the whole United States that actually has a majority of women on their board of supervisors, and I am really excited. For all those who attend, you will not only have a chance to network and meet the supervisors, but you will also receive a special copy of our Women's Spaces Pledge. I encourage all women to tell their women friends and bring your children, bring your young girls.
Bring your men,
bring everybody. The whole idea is to introduce these women and let you know how they got to where they are and encourage other women to participate. So that's going to be this Wednesday, March 22nd, from 4 to 6. It's going to be at the Carpenters Hall on 1700 Corby Avenue in Santa Rosa. And I went into that hall, and the vibes are just great when I think of all the union, you know, the organizers that came together in that room and talked about negotiating salaries and all the other things that they do. And to have these three supervisors in that room is just going to be amazing. Remember, 4 to 6 at the Carpenters Hall, 1700 Corby Avenue, Santa Rosa. And we're going to be listening to Susan Gorin, Shirley Zane, who happens to be the chair now. So we not only have a majority of women, but we also have a woman that's the chair. I mean, it's just amazing. And also Linda Hopkins. Linda Hopkins is the new supervisor on the board. She went through a horrendous election. And another shout out for her, how she stuck to it. We had her on the air, and boy, she's been handed a lot for such a early in her term with the flooding and all the different things that went on. So it's a free event. We're going to have refreshments, and you'll have, like I said, you'll have a chance to network. So bring your business cards, bring your friends, but bring your young children, your girls, but especially your young women, because it's good for them to hear how these women got to where they got. I mean, it's not just a snap of the finger. It takes work, it takes commitment, and it takes a lot of volunteer hours. I know, particularly around Susan Gore, and I have watched her over the years, and that woman has been on almost every committee that I can think of. So I know she's put in hundreds of hours of volunteer, and I know she's going to have a lot to share with all of us. Well, that's a lot to chew on. And, you know, when I left the show on Monday, I mean, I was really ribbed up, you know, listening to the Wild West Woman talk about one of my favorite people, which is Inez Mulholland. And by the way, at the event, we have 6 copies of that film, and I'm going to do a special free raffle. Everybody that comes is also not only going to get a copy of Women's Spaces Pledge, but they're also going to get a little raffle ticket, and we're going to be raffling off 6 of Inez Mulholland's film. It's really very exciting to me. And then after the show last week, I left, and then I went down to the Luther Burbank Center. You know, I just love saying that, Luther Burbank Center. I mean, I was so excited when we got our name back. I mean, I don't know. You know, I have Vesta Copestakes, who is the publisher and the main editor for the Sonoma County Gazette, and I'm sure she can relate to that when we finally got Luther Burbank back. Well, anyway, I attended the Women in Conversation event at the Luther Burbank Center and got to hear Gloria Steinem, the founder of Miss Magazine, and I actually got to ask her a question. Her presentation was heartfelt, and she shared a lot of history about the women's movement, which I thought was important because many of us do not remember what it was like before choice, before gaining some equality. But the most important was choice. You know, it's amazing. I just do not understand, you know, what's going on around this issue. I mean, to me, it's so simple. You have a right to choose what you want to do, if you want to take birth control, if you want to have a child, if you don't want to have a child, all these different things that a woman has to make decisions about.
Any choice is not just that one that we now have control over.
Right. It's really, really important. You know, she spoke for a short while, and then she opened up to comments, questions, and even announcements. I announced our March 22nd event. I was really excited, and I also gave her a copy of my poetry book. And there was even a picture on the Press Democrat, if you go on their site with the event, and there's a picture of me with my back. You can see my back, and I was so happy that my hair was kind of co-furred that day in the back. But you can see me asking her a question, which was very, very exciting to me to be that close to someone. She's like an icon,
she's,
you know. You know, she's somebody that really, you know, spurred us on. The highlight for me was when during the question and answer portion, a woman came to the microphone and said, "I felt left out. I could not attend the Women's March because I am pro-life," and asked Diamond what she thought. For me, this was a stunning moment and demonstrated the divide that is happening between women. I also discovered in my research that I thought was very interesting that because the Women's March on January 21st was actually the celebration of, I forget how many years, of Roe versus Wade, I believe it was 40 years, that what they told the pro-life contingent is they didn't want them there.
Who told who?
The organizers of the parade, Women's March. They told and said to the pro-life that they would rather them stay away. And so that's where that woman was coming from. And, you know, I thought that was very courageous of her. Very courageous of her to come up to the mic and to say that. But what was even more exciting for me was what Steinman, how she answered. And Steinman shared with the woman that she and probably the majority of the women that were in the audience were pro-life and pro-choice, and questioned the woman, why does she think the government should be involved in a woman's right to choose? It was a moment for me as I recognized I wanted to know the answer to that. Why is it a problem for women to have a choice? Why do you have to have the government telling you, you can't do this, you can do this, you can't do this, you can do this? Why do they have insurance companies dictating whether we get free birth control or not? I mean, not free, but it's part of our insurance. I mean, all these things that are affecting women are very, very interesting to me. And the woman was very silent. She never answered. But I felt it just opened something up in me. And I want to know the answer to that question. And also, I want to encourage women to come together and dialogue with one another. I don't like the idea that these women were churned away and they were told they could not be at the parade.
I wonder if it's the same woman who contacted me, because she said the exact same words. I didn't attend because I felt that we were not invited and we were not encouraged to be there. And I said that all pro-life people are also anti-war. Because you can't have a war without killing people, which isn't that anti-life?
I know. I mean, the whole, you know, Bester, the whole question needs to be debated. You know, like we're having a panel. I have a little in my back of my head. If anybody that's listening is from the pro-life groups, I wish you would email me at Elaine, E-L-A-I-N-E, at womenspaces.com. I would like to talk to you. I would like to make some space available for you, and I would like to have this question answered.
Okay, you need to put this in an editorial in the Gazette.
Well, we have this in the snippets. So there's a little part.
A little piece, but it's out there in the other part, you know, where the opinions are that inspire conversation.
Oh, well, thank you, Vesta. I mean, this is great. You know, and you know, what's really, here we are sitting in the studio. I'm sitting with Vesta Kopczyk, who is, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the most comprehensive papers that goes out in Sonoma County. But what I like the best about it is because it's community. You have all these different community voices, which we don't hear that often. Well, back to this. You know, as women, we have to come together. You know, we're all pro-life. I mean, for God's sakes, we give birth to life. I mean, I'm a grandmother. On June 17th, my grandson is going to be getting married, and he's telling me, "Grandma, you might be a great-grandma." And I'm going, "Oh, boy, I'm going to be a great-grandma. Oh, wow, I better get active." So it's really important. As women, we need to come together and dialogue with one another around the important issues and begin to build bridges, not walls. I mean, you know, it's so interesting. When I was listening to that woman, I felt there was this huge divide. And she's pro-life and I'm pro-life. But I don't understand why women have a problem with choice, why they need the government to put all these rules and regulations around our bodies. You know, there's a great, great book I remember when I was going to Sonoma State that I had the privilege of reading, which was called Our Bodies, Ourselves.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and it was really amazing. You know, all of a sudden I realized I had a body. You know, that my breasts were not just these sexy things, but they were for children and all the different things that women do. So it's just a lot. You know, it's really, it's very, very important.
You and I came into womanhood with that book. It was the Woman's Health Book Collective.
Right.
And they had studied all these nurses and people in the healthcare profession and learned so many things about bodies that when I came of age, that was the book that I used as the guide.
Well, you know, another thing that's funny, you know, by the way, you're listening to Vesta Copesakes.
She told me I could talk anytime.
The publisher of the Sonoma County Gazette. And I said to Vesta, anytime you want to come and join me, I mean, I'd love to just do a talk show with her. I mean, she's one of these women that has a mind that just blows me away. I just love it so much. Well, anyway, I want to do a special shout out to Summit Bank and to the Press Democrat for bringing Gloria Steinem here. And from what I understand, there was all kinds of rules and regulations in order to get here. It was a packed room, and it was an amazing event. And I want to thank Gloria for coming here. She's written a new book. I mean, it's just all kinds of wonderful things listening to her. But the most important thing that I walked away with is that here we are in 2017, and I was at Sonoma State in 1973 at the height of women's studies, and I saw the divide then, and the divide has even gotten thicker around this whole thing around choice. And I have said it over and over and over again. I am not for abortion. I am not against abortion. I am for choice. I have no right as a woman, as a human being, to determine what one woman wants to do when she's pregnant, if she wants to have that child or not. It's very important to recognize that.
Well, I think the other part is that it is the have that child. It has only partly to do with having an abortion and ending the pregnancy. You have to raise that child, and that means to raise a good child, you have to have food, money, shelter, support, family support. It's a huge project that lasts a lifetime.
Right, and so the village should be involved.
And it's not the kind of thing that if you can't do it well, then you need to have the choice to say, I can't do it well. This child will suffer.
And you know something that's very interesting? I was down at the Santa Rosa Mall one day, and they had a bunch of pro-life people there. And I walked up. There happened to be a man there. And I says, you know, what about if the child's not wanted? He said, oh, well, we make sure there's adoption. Well, I encourage people to start reading some of the trauma, even from a baby that's taken from her mother that's adopted. I mean, there's a lot more into what it takes when a baby is born and the mother-child relationship. It starts our whole life. Our whole life begins in those few moments. Our whole life begins the moment that woman's pregnant, what she's eating, how she's sleeping, what kind of trauma she has, all kinds of things.
Also, the sperm donor. The sperm donor has a tremendous amount of genetic material. And sometimes the sperm donor is a rapist. There are so many situations where the sperm donor is not necessarily someone whose genetics you really want to pass along.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. That's why I think Vesta, it is so important that we have a dialogue. And I think the dialogue should be called, we're building bridges, not walls, towards life for all children, a good life for children. Well, anyway, that's a lot to think about. And I'm going to remind you one more time before we take a musical break. This Wednesday, we're having a panel of women, the three board of supervisors here at 1700 Corby Avenue in Santa Rosa from 4 to 6. It's in collaboration with the National Women's Organization, the Sonoma County Chapter, KBBF 89.1 FM. A special shout out to Alicia Sanchez, our president, for supporting women's spaces and now in this effort. And it's going to be happening this Wednesday from 4 to 6. Well,
she's a busy girl.
There's stuff to think about, ladies and gentlemen out there. We're going to take a musical break. And I'm so excited to know I have access to iTunes, so I can get all these great songs. And I found this one song by Beverly Grant. In fact, Beverly happens to be my middle name. That's why I call myself Elaine B. But Beverly is really my middle name. And the song is We Were Here. Why am I playing this song? Excuse me. Thank you.
Thanks, Ken.
I love my engineer. Thank you, Ken. We Were There by Beverly Grant. And the reason I'm playing this song is to remind women how much we have accomplished by coming together, not falling apart and going this way and that way, but coming together with ideas, coming together with the desire for equality and choice. When I come back, I will be talking with Vesta Copesakes, who's the publisher and editor of the Sonoma County Gazette, which I'm proud to write for. And here we go with We Were There by Beverly Grant.
Thank you. done the same work as the men, with babies in our arms. But you won't find our stories in most history books you read. We were there, we're still here, fighting for the things we need. We were there in the factories. We were there in the mills. We were there in the mines and came home to fix the meals. We were there on the picket line. We raised our voices loud. It makes me proud just knowing we were there. Textile mills in Lawrence, to the sweatshops in New York, from the fields in California, where our children had to work. We fought to make a living, bread and roses was our cry. Though they jailed and beat our bodies, our spirit never died. We were there. Italian and Latina, Chinese and Russian too. They tried to use our differences to split us all apart. But the pain we felt together touched the bottom of our hearts. We were there.
There. I was there at Sonoma State from 1973 to 1975 when Our Bodies Ourselves just came out. For you just joining in, you're listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And without further ado, I want to formally introduce my first guest, Vesta Copesakes, publisher of the Sonoma County Gazette. Welcome, Vesta.
Oh,
welcome.
It's always a pleasure to be here with you. You are so inspiring, and so you instigate so many thoughts.
That's what Women's Spaces is about. Let's start thinking, ladies.
We've been thinking all along.
let me tell you a little bit about Vesta. Vesta Copesakes is the publisher of the Sonoma County Gazette, and the Sonoma County Gazette is a community paper, and she's also a successful graphic designer. One of her mottos is, if you can dream it, you can do it. She believes,
thank you, Walt Disney.
She believes love where you live, which is the motto of the Sonoma County Gazette, which at present is reaching more than 130,000 readers a month in print and online, along with 34,000 copies distributed to almost 1,000 newsstands. Wow. She attributes the strength of the paper to articles on diverse subjects and community involvement. And I think that holds true, as all the cities, I believe, are represented. And if it's not in print, it is available, correct?
Oh, yeah, online, SonomaCountyGazette.com. And interestingly enough, we did expand our circulation last month to 35,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Because we couldn't keep up distribution throughout, deep into the month, we were running out of papers. So, all right, so we added more papers. But we're also going, our SonomaCountyGazette.com is a really good website, but it's not mobile friendly, even though I'm looking at it right now on my mobile, my cell phone. But we have to do this thing called becoming mobile friendly. So now our new website launching April 1st, you will be able to look on it on any device in any way, and it automatically adjusts. It's so cool.
April 1st is going to be Ken and I anniversaries.
We're
going to be going into our 17th year. Well, you know,
you've been married. You've been together the same number of years that my husband and I have been together. But
that's
we've only been married 1 year.
Anyway, this is National Women's History Month, and I thought it would be appropriate to have, you know, women that are involved in the media, which is definitely you, about some of the challenges along with the joys that I know that you experience. But you were going to allude to something that we had earlier.
Well, it totally connects to actually your next guest as well as what you were talking about earlier, women's activism. So Sandra Maresca is a woman in on the Lower Russian River who's been very, very involved in, broad range in her professional career. And she got really upset about young women in the millennial groups who were saying, we don't need to have a woman in the White House because we want to vote for Bernie, and so we're not going to vote for Hillary, and we're not going to vote, and all the rest of it. So one of the things that happened with the Trump elections is that the people who did not vote basically voted for Trump, and the people who voted third party voted for Trump. So we ended up with Trump. And so what is Sandra Maresca is saying is that in her op-ed, which is online right now, opinion, we do not want Trump's Great America. The Great America that he is referring to is backwards. It's basically all those things that we fought so hard for decades. But a lot of young women are totally unaware of it because they've grown up with many choices, many freedoms, many assumptions that it's always been this way, or they knew kind of sort of what it was like, but not really. They hadn't lived it. You know how experience tells you the tale. So Sandra goes through this list of all these things that she's 72, I think she said she was, and all the things that she experienced when she was young that these young women really don't have to experience. And I'm in the same position myself. I when I was reading her essay, I was going, oh my God, I still remember the employer who did not hire me because I wasn't pretty enough, the employer who I was not cooperating sufficiently enough, so he slammed me against the wall, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
How about when you find out that there's a male counterpart doing your job and you're getting like almost 30% less than he is?
Right, and that...
And you're actually helping that person move forward, and you're getting less, and you're getting less respect.
Well, and my cousin Lucy was in the insurance industry, and she kept saying, I keep hitting the glass ceiling. And her frustration was always, she would go from department to department and go as high as she could in the company, insurance company in North America, and she was never allowed to go all the way. And that was one of the biggest frustrations she had, because the glass ceiling was always there. She couldn't rise above a certain level of management. And that's the kind of thing that no longer happens. And so a lot of people are just going, well, yeah, I choose my career. I take my career path. I go there, and I'm done. I'm on my way.
Well, talking about career paths, thank you for sharing that. Now, the article, the op-ed, is on the Sonoma County Gazette.
Yes, SonomaCountyGazette.com, and it's right on the scrolling stories right now, and it's called We Do Not Want Trump's Great America, and it's written by Sandra Maresca. I do not want Trump's Great America.
And she's a local person.
She's a local woman, yeah. Just, smart. Anybody can write for the Gazette if you've got... rational thoughts. So anyway, and I put it up on my Facebook page too. So Sonoma County Gazette's Facebook page is also a major way for people to keep connected on issues that are important. So I will post stories around meetings and all social political issues and all the rest of it. But I also put a link to this because I want to stimulate this conversation. That's one of the things I like to do with the Gazette is stimulate conversation.
Oh, and it's important, especially now with women's issues. So let's get in. Let's talk a little bit, Vesta, because you're an inspiration to me. I mean, I got to tell you, when I open that paper and I think that you pull it together every month, I mean, all these articles, every city just about is represented. We have from your 5th district, you have the supervisor actually write an article. I mean, it's such a rich paper. Give us a little background. How did you start this, and what was your motivation, your dream when you started it?
Well, I don't think I had a dream. What I've learned in life is that I always fall into things backwards. And so, you know, I just, my motto is basically just say yes. So someone says, can you do that? And I go, sure, why not? You know, and if I don't really know how to do it, then I figure it out because I'm smart enough to do that. So that's how I got into being into advertising and marketing. I used to have an advertising agency. So the Gazette came about through all my volunteer work.
Well, the most important thing is, where did you get the tenacity where all of a sudden you say, hey, I don't know this, but I can learn it? Where does that come from? And how do you attribute your success? I mean, what motivated you?
Partly I'd say that's genetics. Chatty Cathy with a lot of people. I talk to tons of people, which means I know a lot of people. That really comes from my father. My father was a very socially, politically active individual, talked to a lot of people, connected with a lot of people. I find that I'm really following my father's footsteps in so many of the things I do. And he raised me to be a very strong, independent woman.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because my dad was a union man. He was also a union organizer, and he was also very, very involved in the union. And he believed in equal rights for women. I mean, he definitely demonstrated it by the relationship between him and my mother. My mother was definitely not a housewife, even though she had a house to take care of.
And my father was a single father. And so, yeah, my mother went into a mental institution when I was 6, when my brother was born. So my father raised 2 daughters, and he raised us to be very strong and independent. And it was essential, in essence, also, because we had to take care of ourselves. We were really little kids when she went into the institution. So that's part of it, but it's part of who he is. And his mother was a very strong person. And so it's just the world of strong women in his family was kind of how it always went. You know, you can go back into the generations. You can see that there are strong women in each one of the families. On both sides of my family, my mother's father's side as well as my father's side. It's genetic, you know, and it's also being encouraged to have someone who encourages you all along the way.
Well, you know, you said your motto is to say yes.
Yeah.
Your motto is to say yes. What started the Gazette? What did you say yes to?
To the Gazette.
What were your challenge?
Well, because at the time, I was a single mother myself, and cleaning houses, doing landscaping, and doing graphic design. And graphic design work, people pay you when they get around to it. It's cleaning houses, you get money right away. You go out and you clean the house, there's a check sitting on the counter, you come home with it, you buy groceries. So I was also volunteering heavily. Being self-employed allowed me to be the 1950s mom. So I dropped my kid off at the bus stop in the morning, I picked her up at the bus stop in the afternoon. I never missed a soccer game. I volunteered in the classroom. So because I was self-employed, and this is the land of cleaning houses, really worked. I was making $20 an hour when my kid was in elementary school. She's now 32 years old. This land of being in control of yourself and your time, it allowed me to make a living to volunteer. So the Chamber of Commerce had this little newsletter that they published, and I had been the publisher of the elementary school newsletter, and they just said, do you want to do this? You know everybody in town. So I said, yeah, I'll do that. What the heck, you know, just because I can, because I have editorial skills, I have graphic design skills, I have connections in the community. And it evolved over time, because the land of being in advertising and marketing means that I will consistently market whatever I'm doing. So I just kept expanding it. And so it went from 12 pages black and white, just Forestville, to 72 pages full color, all Sonoma County, over 1,000 locations. I mean, we just learned, we did Google Analytics, and we had 286,000 page views last year on our website alone, which kind of blew me away. I didn't realize it was that much. Yeah. So there are like 20,000-30,000 people every month who go to our website. That's a lot of people to connect with.
So you said yes to this challenge and built it from 12 pages all the way up to the paper it is today, and now you're distributing 35,000, which is amazing. You know, my curiosity is, how do you get your writers? I mean, you have such a diverse, like you said, one of the strengths in the paper is the diversity. How do you get all these diverse people to write?
They actually read the paper. So, like, and it's true. People pick up the paper. That's how I get my advertisers, too. I don't have an advertising staff. People read the paper and they say, I like this paper. I should be part of this. And I know I can be because I have something I want to share. There's a woman who's written an article about pesticides in public places. She's one of my readers, and this happens to be her personal passion.
So wait a minute. So you not only have writers from the community, you also have readers that submit articles.
Oh, yeah.
So you're giving all that community. You're actually, it's like a community voice.
Oh, yeah. That's why I know hundreds of people. This is amazing. Yeah, it is a community voice. It's very, very much a community voice. It's the whole thing of my motto is to connect people in the community and connect communities within each other. So that's one of the reasons why we have all these community columns, because people are isolated in their own town, but they don't know what's going on in some other town. So one of the things that's happening across the county is things like, how do you handle drug addiction and homelessness? And so each community, even throughout the Bay Area, even through the United States, are finding independent solutions. Well, if we all connect together, we can find, oh, wait a minute, we could use that piece of thing that you do there.
So it's almost like a networking paper.
It is, very much.
Like you're networking, you're throwing out ideas. Well, you know, the time goes by so fast, it's amazing to me. We're kind of coming to the end of the segment. But if there's a young woman out there who wants to do what you're doing, what would you recommend?
Oh, what, you want me to have competition?
I never thought. If there was one young woman out there who wanted to work for you.
No. There you go. it's really, I think the big thing is that you follow your path, your passion. The more passionate you are about something, it's one of the reasons why I like articles written in the first person. The more passionate you are about your subject, it's not a job, it's a calling. It's something that just simply calls to you, that you want to do, that you think you can have an influence over others. And it's not like you're going to change anybody's mind. You can't have any attachment to the outcome. But if you put it out there, so someone is learning to write or whatever, they can write something for me and see how the world responds to it.
Well, you know, as a writer, you know, and I want to thank you again for giving me the opportunity. I mean, I think of 35,000 people might just the distribution alone, that all those people might be reading what I'm writing. There's a certain feeling that you get, like, you know, you feel like you're really part of a community, like you're trying to communicate something. So give us your website and tell the listeners how they can get in touch with you and how they can submit a story.
Okay, the easiest is my website is SonomaCountyGazette.com, GAZETTE, and Vesta@sonic.net is my email, VESTA@sonic.net. That's my name and Vesta Publishing, and it's 707-887-0253 is my telephone number, and all that information is on SonomaCountyGazette.com and on our Facebook page. And I have to sneeze.
God bless you, Vesta. After you sneeze, are there any last words or any last ideas that you would like to share?
Well, the most important thing is to be involved in your community. If you know, the sitting back and complaining about things really accomplishes very little, other than perhaps you can bring up an issue that other people were not aware of. But you have to be part of the solution. It's really, really important not just to complain about it, to be part of the solution. And there are millions of ways to get involved in your community and be part of the solution. Whether it's one of the things that came up recently is the homeless issue. One of the ways you become intimate with the homeless issue is because you help homeless people. You go out on the street, you meet people, you find out what their stories are, you help them in some way, you volunteer in a kitchen. If you want to learn a subject, immerse yourself in the subject. And then, of course, if you learn so much you want to share it, write, send me an article.
Give us your website one more time, Vesta.
SonomaCountyGazette.com.
Well, Vesta Copesakes, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces and, as always, inspiring me. Well, we're going to take a musical break, and I'm so excited. I have a woman by the name of Zoe Nicholson on the phone who is an expert on the life of Alice Paul, who was an activist that did so much for women in our community. I mean, you know, we need to know. Our history is our strength, and I get a lot of strength knowing about Alice Paul. Well, we're going to take a musical break, and when we come back, I'll be talking with Zoe Nicholson, equality activist for over 50 years. She's a public speaker, a writer, and an organizer and producer of the film Alice Paul, The Heart of an Activist, and we'll be talking in depth about Alice Paul. The song I will be playing is another song by Beverly Grant, and it really, women have to ask themselves this question: which side am I on? Am I on the side of choice? Or I'm on the side of being dominated in ways that I do not want to be dominated. Anyway, here we go with Bev Grant with Whose Side Are You On? And when we come back, we will be talking to Zoe Nicholson, producer of the film Alice Paul, The Heart of an Activist.
Which side are you on? 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 Come all you poor workers, good news to you I'll tell. How the good old union has come in here to dwell. Which side are you on? 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 We're starting our good battle, we know we should win.
Yes, what a great question. Which side are you on? Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest on the phone with me, Zoe Nicholson. Welcome, Zoe. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Well, I'm so happy that you called. I'm looking forward to sharing what I know about Ms. Paul with all your listeners.
But also, I wanted you to get a feeling of what the show was out and what Vesta was talking about. She is the publisher of a major paper here in Sonoma County, so I thought it was very important that you hear her. Before we start, can I tell my listener audience a little bit about you? And so I have to confess, you have such a strong resume. I had to cut it down. So after I'm finished introducing you, anything that you would like to add that you feel is relevant, please be my guest.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you right at the start to say I have not produced a film. It's a book, Miss Alice Paul, The Heart of an Activist. There are 5 chapters already posted, and we'll talk about that. But the film that I was the assistant producer on was by your guest last week, Martha Wheelock, who made the film Inez Milholland, Forward Into Light.
Oh, forgive me. So the Heart of an Activist, Alice Paul, The Heart of an Activist, is actually a book.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, forgive me. I was looking at, you know, with what happened with Inez Milholland. I just
sure.
Took the two. So let me tell my listeners just a little bit about you. Zoe Nicholson calls herself an equality activist, and she's been doing this for 50 years. She's a public speaker, a writer, and an organizer. She was involved actually in the 1968 Democratic Convention to the Supreme Court Steps for Marriage Equality. Movements include peace, labor, civil rights, choice, public health, women, and LGBTQ. She has a BA in theology from Quincy University and an MA in ethics from USC, always with a resolute commitment to nonviolent direct action. In 1982, she joined 6 women in Springfield, Illinois, in a public fast for 37 days in support of the Equal Rights Amendment. She produced a video called The Hungry Heart, A Woman's Fast for Justice, including in her work, and that's what we'll be talking about today, is Alice Paul, The Heart of Activism. And I want to ask you one question. When you produced this film, The Hungry Heart, A Woman's Fast for Justice, did that grow out of that fast?
Well, again, we have the same circumstance here, so I would love to talk about that. When I was sitting on this folding chair in the Illinois State House, there were 7 of us, and of course Phyllis Schlafly was right across the floor with all the ladies in red jackets.
Oh, you're kidding.
We were dressed in white with purple sashes, And Sonia Johnson had invited me to come and sit there. We fasted on water for 37 days to insulate myself from the violence that was going on, aimed mostly at us. I began writing a journal every day. So for those 37 days, I wrote in a little blank book, and that book became the book, The Hungry Heart. It's not a film. It's a book, The Hungry Heart.
Okay, and is that available now? Is it still available?
Oh, absolutely. If you can go to the publisher, lunesoleilpress.com.
Can you spell that?
Sure, it's French for moon and sun, LUNESOLEIL, press.com. And it's The Hungry Heart for Justice, A Woman's Fast for Justice. And it literally is, without a word changed, my diary entries while fasting.
What did that do for you? I mean, how did that, in your activism, how did that kind of inspire you and motivate you?
Well, that's a really interesting and insightful question. Thank you. You know, I have to admit that once you do something that big, that public, that awesome. you know you're serious. You know you're not dabbling. I'm not an armchair activist. Once you sit there, and there was a man at one point who had a knife with seven knives with their names carved in the handle of each.
God.
Once you know that you are at the front line of equality, you realize the depth of your soul's calling. I believe that is what happened in my falling madly in love with Miss Paul. She was as devoted on to death. And secondly, I want to say that I'm 68, and Alice worked on equality right up through her last few months. She lived to be 92. She died in 1977. So I'm just a baby. I have another 20-something years to work on equality, on the Equal Rights Amendment, which, by the way, is being voted on in Nevada today, which, by the way, is introduced in Congress right this minute, which is the earliest it's ever been introduced to Congress before, which is exciting. But I am dedicated deeply and forever. And so when I discovered that Miss Paul was that, I realized she was, in fact, my mentor, and I began studying everything I could, reading everything I could. And interestingly, I heard your last guest talk about immersion in a subject, and that's exactly what I did during the Vietnam War. I became immersed in Mahatma Gandhi, which only made sense. And imagine my surprise to find out that in 1909, Mohandas K. Gandhi and Alice Paul both were taking classes taught by Miss Emmeline Pankhurst.
In the same classroom?
Yes, they were in Royal Albert Hall in the summer of 1909. We can see that by the journal entries of Mahatma Gandhi later on in his newsletters, again beckoning to the information distribution that your last guest was saying is so important. And Gandhi said a movement isn't a movement without a newspaper. So the Sonoma County Gazette, or the Gazette that the fabulous Molly McGregor puts out from the National Women's History Project, were not a movement without a paper. And Alice knew that. And they put out the Suffragette, which eventually became a newspaper called Equal Rights. So the reason that they left is even more dazzling. When Mrs. Pankhurst began giving the green light on violence, which she did, most definitely, both Alice and Gandhi left. because they did not believe that violence was going to get them the result that they wanted. Now, they were, the 1909 system of Twitter was putting a note, a short note, tying it to a rock and throwing it through the window at Parliament.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
Don't you think that's fun? But once it was put forth that people might set buildings on fire, that someone might be inside, that harm could come to anyone in the British suffrage movement, they actually move towards such dangerous ideas.
Let me ask you a question here. You know, it's very interesting. Why do you think, you know, when I first came across, I mean, I really feel, I hate to admit my ignorance, but I will. You know, I studied women's studies and the whole nine yards, you know, our history and as much as I could get when I was going to Sonoma State, but I did not really find out our history or at least some vision of it when I saw Iron-Jawed Angels. And after I watched the movie, I said, how come I never really knew about Alice Paul?
I have an answer.
Go ahead.
Which is just one of my most disturbing revelations. It took me a long time to find this out. Well, you probably know that Miss Cat and Miss Paul were absolutely adversaries. Every time Alice did something wicked brave, Miss Cat would write a letter of apology to President Wilson.
Who was Miss Cat?
Carrie Chapman Catt.
Oh, okay.
She was head of the largest moderate group of women working for the Equal Rights Amendment and for the vote, actually. I'm sorry, not the Equal Rights Amendment. They were working on the vote. And they were moderates. And when the war broke out, they thought Alice should back up, should stop her activism. And, of course, Alice thought it was the time to escalate. So as Alice was escalating with the Sentinels standing around the White House, Miss Cat and her ladies, over 100,000, which eventually unfolded into the League of Women Voters after the 19th Amendment passed, Miss Cat would write letters explaining to the president, oh my, well, please don't misunderstand, that's not our feeling. We believe, Mr. President, in supporting your decision, and we will suspend while you are busy fighting this war. We will suspend our work for suffrage and come back once that is settled. And, of course, Alice just escalated, especially on the heels of the death of Inez Milholland, who died in November 25th and the following March, when Wilson was coming to a second inauguration, was when Alice sent her sentinels out to stand around the White House fence for 17 months. But back to your question,
17 months they protested in front of the White House?
6 days a week, they stood there, rain or shine, snow or sleet, beginning in silence. Banners were ripped, poles were broken, came within inches of hitting them. Yes, 17 months, there were people, women mostly, standing around the gates of the White House. It began January 10th, 1917, I'm so sorry. And they stood there for 17 months. And Alice, many were arrested, among them Dorothy Day, the great woman, the socialist who started the National Catholic Reporter. Women of great esteem were there, and women who were poor were there. Women actually sent their daughters there with notes that said, I sent my son to war, and now I'm sending my daughter to win the vote.
Oh, my goodness. It's amazing. I send
it
my
is.
Son to war, and now I'm sending my daughter to get the vote. Well, let me ask you a question. You know, time goes by really quick when you're doing these interviews.
Mm-hmm.
You studied Alice Paul, I understand, for about 35 years. What was the most surprising thing that you found out about her? And what would she think of the current women's movement and the ERA?
Well, I want to give you two, you asked three really important things right there. I'm going to pop back for one sentence to say that Miss Cat paid Ida Harper to redact Alice out of the history books. And I want you to really take that in, because you asked, why don't I know about Alice? Why did I find out in a Hollywood movie, which was a complete misrepresentation of her, but nonetheless, it is how some people at least got their curiosity piqued, was that Miss Cat actually told Ida to redact Alice out of the history book.
Oh, my goodness.
Volumes 5 and 6. So that's one of the reasons we don't know much about her. Now you're asking what she would think today, and you know I feel at liberty to tell you she would care about only one thing, because that's all she ever cared about, and that was equality of rights under the law. She'll not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of sex. She put her head down and said, this is it. When she first walked into that settlement house as a young woman and saw poverty for the very first time, much like the wonderful Gerda Lerner writes happened in her life, being raised in privilege and then realizing what inequality looks like, Alice dedicated her life for financial, secure, legal equality. And I think that's what she would be doing today. It was what she was doing on her 92nd birthday when Mrs. Ford called to say, happy birthday, Alice. And Alice said, you know, Mrs. Ford, your husband's president for 9 more days. He could do something about the Equal Rights Amendment. She never gave up. And abortion, immigration, homelessness, minimum wage, even the terrible things that we're suffering under threats of the current federal administration, I think she still would continue working on the Equal Rights Amendment, because she believed that without that fundamental pillar of equality, we will always be at risk until we are explicitly in the United States Constitution. And she felt so strongly that when interest waned here in the U.S., she let it be known to other countries that she would help any country in the world. She would help any women get into their homeland's constitution. And she actually consulted with the women of Japan.
Zoe, we are coming to the end of our segment, and I want to thank you. I mean, this is so exciting. I would love to bring you on again, and I'm going to check up on all the different websites that you've given us. One last time, give us your name and your website.
When Alice was asked, what would you like to be called? She would say, Miss Paul. My website is MissAlicePaul.com.
Miss M-S, right?
M-I-S-S.
M-I-S-S, Alice.
Well,
M-I-S-S.
Okay. She was a single lady, and we didn't have such things as M-S back then. It was MissAlicePaul.com. And my name is Zoe Nicholson, and I'm in love with Alice. I think you might have caught my infatuation.
Well, I have to say that you have actually made me fall in love with Alice Paul. I mean, it started with Iron-Jawed Angels, and I've been doing a lot of research. In fact, maybe we can come sometime, you can come back, and we can talk about the discrepancies in the film. But
I'd love to.
Zoe Nicholson, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces. And your website is missalicepaul.com. And can they find information about the book and all those other things?
The book is there. It's posted 5 chapters. The start of the book is right online. You can read it there. Happy Women's History Month to you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Zoe Nicholson. I mean, you have been an absolute inspiration. Well, folks, that's it for our show. Special thank you to Vesta Copesakes, publisher of the Sonoma County Gazette, and Zoe Nicholson, equality activist for over 50 years, who is the producer of the film producer of the book, Alice Paul, The Heart of an Activist. And I really, really appreciated the in-depth conversation about Alice Paul. And you know, we all have to have her tenacity. We cannot give up. Because if we give up, they're going to take our rights away and we're not going to have choice. Anyway, this is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. I want to thank you so much for listening and I look forward to being with you the next time.
In your life.